Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Thanks so much for being with us. As you're listening, you can keep emailing questions for Mayor Dennis to ask@wbaa.org. Mayor, welcome to the show this afternoon.
How's it going, Emily?
It's going all right. What's the weather like out there right now? I haven't been outside since this morning.
Well, let me see. Do you want me to do my meteorological voice?
Sure, let's do it.
No way. No, not going to happen. Somebody might decide to hire me for my mayor's office job. It's raining. It's raining. Not necessarily cats and dogs. Maybe mice and gerbils.
Mice and gerbils. I've never heard that before. I like that. I may start using that.
It's a sprinkle. You are empowered. Go forth and use until not.
Thank you. So let's talk about some stuff that's been happening this week. West Lafayette City Council met this week, and the city's mask-wearing ordinance will be back up for discussion, back on the table, as it were, at the June meeting. And you've indicated you think it's time to lift it. So what conversations have you had with the members of City Council about this? What's that been like?
You know, one of the really cool things about our council is we interact frequently. I mean, we have a lot of conversations. You know, oftentimes councilors stop by, not least of which is to check out the new building because we haven't been able to have a meeting here yet. But they do. They visit. We communicate via email and text as well as phone call. And they're acutely aware of where we are in this city when it comes to the overall compliance with the mask mandate. Generally speaking, you know, people are probably voluntarily doing the right thing. They wear their masks, they keep their distance, they wash their hands, and they make sure if they're a business owner that they keep the numbers of folks inside their businesses to the standards that have been established by the state. Because of that, it seems like I am considering, and I have to emphasize here the word considering, going ahead and pulling the mask mandate. You know, one of the things about having an administrative enforcement device on our books, it allows for several different approaches to it, one of which is obviously the enforcement of that particular ordinance or administrative decision. Second off is to withdraw it, which would require, obviously, council approval. And third is one of the more creative ways, and that is to just go at it from a different perspective. To this date, well, I can't say today because I haven't had a chance to talk to my police chief, but we have not written any tickets in regards to the mask mandate. Generally speaking, when we see somebody who's in violation, whether it be through distancing, not wearing a mask or something to that effect, we make a recommendation and they 100% of the time comply. And that is what we're going for. You know, having something, an enforcement mechanism on the books is awesome. I mean, that adds that little extra bit of oomph when needed. But we have been in a very fortunate position right now, specifically within the city of West Lafayette, and obviously that includes Purdue, to be able to get voluntary compliance. So with that understanding and with the numbers starting to head once again in the right direction, it's time to give that some consideration. Now, that means when is it going to happen? Am I going to do it next month, month after that, or at some time later in the year? I haven't made that decision yet. Because if the ordinance is on the books and that keeps people complying, that's great. If I take the ordinance off and people start going the opposite direction, that creates a challenge. You know, all these conversations I had with my staff and with our legal team and some of the folks in the medical field prior to drafting the ordinance in the first place. So I guess that's a really long way of saying, yep, I'm kind of thinking about bringing it up again. But I will give it some more contemplative moments of my time to see if it's really necessary. If it's on the books and people are still abiding by it and it's not generating any hardships, I might just leave it there. If I'm getting some guidance from the citizens the other way, then we'll go ahead and remove it. Or, you know, if people are saying, please keep it, because we're seeing a lot more challenges out there than I'm aware of, that'll give me some food for thought as well.
Well, and you raise a point. What are you hearing? I know you hear, you know, any number of things and have heard any number of things from residents over the past year about the mandate, both for and against. So
you want me to read you some of my favorite ones? I can't, because this is public radio. I don't want to say some of the words that have been given to me about this stuff.
So more recently.
It's recent too. Yeah.
Well, so again, obviously Lafayette and the county more broadly has switched to an advisory in West Lafayette that hasn't happened. So I guess just since April 6th, what have you heard from your constituents, I guess?
Both sides. I know I was being a little glib about it, but both sides. You know, there are people that are deeply supportive of the mask mandate. There are folks that have felt that it has really given them a sense of comfort when they're going out in public, knowing that the rules are that you will wear a mask in the city of West Lafayette. You know, we have a really interesting age demographic here in West Lafayette. We got a bunch of young folks, we got a bit of a pause, and we got a bunch of older folks. And, you know, that dynamic really gives you some interesting feedback when it comes to doing things that one demographic might feel is restrictive on their personal freedoms and others might feel that it's an enhancement to their feeling of personal safety when it comes to their health. So I'm getting a lot of guidance and instruction from both sides. I would say, generally speaking, though, it's positive. People are grateful for having the mask mandate in place. They understand that as you drive around our city, you're seeing a lot of voluntary compliance. We've got a great deal of support from Purdue. The university is still encouraging students to wear masks when they're inside confined spaces and in the classrooms and things like that. There's a lot of voluntary compliance when they're going in between classes. So there's a lot to think about. You know, I think that either way, if we keep it on the books for a little while longer, you know, we've got a mechanism in place that will be there. Again, one of those hypothetical realities of government. If it's on the books, but there's not a great deal of enforcement, you know, what does that mean? It's the proverbial, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, doesn't make a sound. Boy, that was a good analogy. Anyway,
it is a commonly used analogy, yes.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, specifically from political guys when they're talking about political stuff. But, you know, if it's there and the enforcement focuses on something else, how does that play out in River City? So there's a lot of things to think about. You know, my initial desire, my initial intentions was to make sure that if we were going to remove our enforcement support, then we might as well get the legislation off the books. But if you look at most codes and if you look at a lot of different things that go on in any city in the United States, there's a lot of stuff that are on the books that might not necessarily apply, whether it be because we've moved on as a society or whatever that particular protocol or operation doesn't even exist anymore. And that's one of those inefficiencies of government. But again, back on topic.
So it sounds like it's safe to say that at this particular moment in time, we're in a holding pattern. We are watching and waiting.
Yes, you have taken out of that word salad exactly what I wanted you to get. Good job, Emily.
Thank you. So
you're a trained professional.
So next month, so this will just come back up for discussion.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? I mean, it is one of those things that is very timely. I mean, we are living in an environment now where there's different things that we're doing, and this is, again, pretty much governmental-wide, that is a kind of a break from our regular practice. You know, generally speaking, you know, we have, I heard Dr. Adler on the radio earlier, we have public health officials who are dictating social policy, and for all the right reasons, and I absolutely 100% support what Dr. Adler has done, but that's different. I mean, we really haven't been in a zone like that for too long, with the exception of smoking and then some other obvious things.
Well, and I did want to ask, and we've talked about this a bit before, but the legislation has kind of really started moving this week. You know, the governor vetoed a bill that would essentially not allow public health officials to put emergency restrictions in place more restrictive than the states, so the city council could do that, county commissions could do that, and the legislature is now meeting, so he vetoes this, the legislature now meeting for a technical session on Monday, which could override that veto, so we're just going back and forth, and as Dr. Adler said, you know, and he said in the past, he believes it's important for public health officials to maintain that ability to have that authority to make health decisions. So let's say it's Monday, the veto is overridden, and this new reality happens where the city council does have more say. You know, we've talked before about the collaboration between everyone in this area over COVID. This will change things. You know, how do you foresee all of that working out in the future, you know, in an instance where it does become necessary to have a conversation where decisions have to be made and made quickly about public health?
I can only speak for West Lafayette because that's my job. but, you know, when I first had the conversation about making a mask mandate, my council supported me 100%. They realized that it was necessary. They realized that it was something that needed to be done here. Again, the stuff that I say almost every show, we're the one of the most densely populated cities in the state of Indiana, and comparatively speaking, even in the country, because of our small geographic footprint and the number of students that we have here. And the age dynamic is really interesting to try and get things to go in a certain way, specifically when you're dealing with social issues. So the mask mandate, the support of the mask mandate from the council was unilateral. And I feel confident that if I chose to extend the mandate, they would agree with it. Again, you never know what's going to happen until you get up, you know, on the bright lights in the big cities. But as it stands right now, I think that I've got enough support to keep it on the books. Dr. Adler has been nothing short of amazing in his steadfast commitment to the health of our community. He does it. He does it because he cares, and he does it because he's good at it. And more importantly, he's not going to voluntarily put anybody at risk, you know. But he's realistic. He understands, you know, that as a society, specifically in this country, and more generally, or specifically in this region, we're tired. We're tired of COVID. We're tired of the restrictions. We're tired of masks. We're tired of limits to the businesses that we can go to. We're tired of having to have things closed, et cetera, et cetera. He understands that. But I think, you know, a lot of us on the enforcement side of COVID, a lot of us that are responsible for populations in regards to the potential transmission of a potentially dead virus, are looking at things and going very cautiously. And I think Dr. Adler's in that same boat. If we just pull off the Band-Aid and say, have at it, you know, what's going to happen? Are the numbers going to go up? I mean, you know, logically it would tell you that they might. What's the cause and effect of that? Is it possible once we, you know, sort of let the cat out of the bag to go backwards and say, okay, we tried all this stuff, it's not working very well, now we got to go back? You know, so it seems the more pragmatic way to go would be to say, okay, let's just hold tight where we are. And, you know, if Dr. Adler should choose to do that, I'll support him, as I have throughout this entire pandemic.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. Right now we're talking with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. Also wanted to briefly touch on this. The city has funding from the American Rescue Plan. And so during the council meeting, you said you'd had some very early conversations about how that money could be spent. Can you talk a little bit about what you are thinking, even just, you know, an early sense? I know it, you know, something that was raised during the meeting, citywide Wi-Fi access under the kind of that broadband infrastructure heading. But yeah, what are you thinking?
Well, obviously it won't go into the John Dennis Retirement Fund, so that one's out.
Correct.
Because I don't want to go to prison. Now, one of the areas that the funding could be utilized in would be things that have to do with our wastewater treatment utility.
Okay.
And our population has grown significantly since the last census. The numbers are not quite completed yet, but we have had a significant bump in our population. The growth in West Lafayette is phenomenal. We also have, you know, 40,000 students that are attending Purdue. So at any given time, we have well over 100,000 people here in our city. And that means for us that it puts a strain on some of our utilities, more specifically our wastewater treatment utility. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in order to make sure that we maintain our high standards there. Currently, you know, our director of our utilities, Dave Henderson, he does an amazing job. The guy is phenomenal with what he does. His science, his pragmatic approach, how he handles things down there is just phenomenal. He's just a great guy, too. But we need to grow, And that growth needs to be done in conjunction with our population growth, with the amount of flow that goes into our utility. So right off the bat, we would do some significant infrastructure work with our wastewater treatment utility. And depending upon how the revenue comes and depending on when it comes, that might dictate some of the other things that we do. You know, there will be restrictions. It's not just, you know, monopoly money. There will be restrictions on what it can be used for. And so there's more clarity to that that will help us make better decisions on what we're going to do with that. You know, as communities grow and as times change and as we do everything we can to improve the service that we provide to our citizens, you know, having assistance from our federal government really does allow for us to have some of a more immediate impact on the overall quality of life of our community. And that pretty much goes for almost any city in the country that's eligible for that funding.
So it looks like the money, I believe, has to be spent by the end of 2024.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the timeline, I guess, to make a decision about what the best use of this money is? You know, how much time do you have to say this is what we're doing?
We can pretty much, you know, the cool thing about what we do here in West Lafayette is our department heads always have a capital plan. They always have, like, their Dear Santa wish list. And, you know, some of it, obviously, you know, when you're talking about infrastructure, you're talking about streets and roads, and police departments talk about things that make their skill set better or to provide some better equipment or to be able to provide service better. Same with fire departments. A fire truck costs about $1 million a piece nowadays. So there is a lot of stuff that goes on within local government that's really pricey. And sometimes you're not in a position to predict when one of those might need to be replaced. So if you're frugal, you do the services that you need to do, but you also save. So we always have an ongoing sort of renewal process in place to be able to make sure some of those necessary components of public service are being treated and funded properly. Other things are a little more difficult to predict. Like, we would not have predicted a growth potential, the growth factor that we've had most during this recent census. Specifically with our wastewater treatment facility, that is very strictly regulated, obviously. You go back to the days 50 and 60 years ago when raw sewage was being dumped into our public waterways. Well, that ain't going to happen anymore, and thank God it's not. So for us to be able to make the commitment that that's not going to happen when our flows are increasing, it's imperative that we provide some guidance and infrastructure work there to get that taken care of. And the city of West Lafayette is only going to continue to grow. So we need to make sure that the infrastructure is in place to handle the flow that we have today, which it is, but also for the flow that we're going to have in the future, which we can prepare for with some of the federal funding that might come this way. The other things that we're looking at is obviously going to have the same kind of qualifiers for quality of life. You know, things that are happening now are relevant to the times that we live in now. But the future, you know, long after I'm gone and things are different, we need to establish some of those base level investments to make sure that things will continue to provide for the necessary components of quality living here in West Lafayette. Some of that's going to be roads. Some of that's going to be clear water transportation systems. And probably more importantly, just to make sure that the necessary functions that are currently in place will be able to grow and continue to provide that level of service.
And so it sounds like what was happening at the meeting on Monday, you were essentially establishing an account where the money will sit and wait.
Yeah, that's required. I mean, you get the account ready, and then that way you have a place to put the money so it doesn't go, again, into the John Dennis Retirement Fund.
Correct. And so as we're talking...
You need to laugh at that, Emily, because I don't want the listeners to think that I'm looking for a way to bank it.
You are not going to put it into your retirement fund.
No, I am not going
to. We are on the air. It is out there now. You will not do it.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So right now we're saying we're creating the account. The money's in the account. Can you even estimate when you might start spending? And when you're going to be able to do that? I know there's a lot of processes here.
It's about $11.1 million, and I'm not yet familiar with the distribution process, if it's one lump sum, if it's over a period of time. You do have to establish, like any time you get it outside funding, you establish an account, and there has to be a very strict, you know, paper trail of expenditures, where it goes, to whom it goes, what it was spent for, if it's a process, when was the process completed, if it's a capital investment, who did the work, how much were they paid, you know, other qualifiers, and then the timeline when it was going to be done. The paper trail and or necessary documentation for federal grants is pretty comprehensive. And again, there's a lot of logic behind having to do that. You know, with this, when we're talking the numbers that we're talking here for communities throughout the state of Indiana and throughout the country, actually, there is a lot of temptation there. So it's imperative that there are some guidelines and standards that are strictly and that the local governments are strictly held to, just to make sure that there's no shenanigans going on with the funding. And we're obviously in a very strong position to do that. We have had received federal grants before, and one of the cool things about being a university town is there are a lot of opportunities available for us because of dealing with the student population and the necessary things that happen within college communities. So that assists us. So we have a pretty strong mechanism in there. Our city controller, Peter Gray, is sharpening his pencils right now just to make sure that we're going to have the necessary accounting protocols in place to track it. So, you know, we're kind of waiting and ready.
Okay. Let's get to some listener questions. Mike writes, I know you being the mayor, are christening the West Side Lum Pantry at the Unitarian Universalist Church. I was wondering about access and marketing. Is a bus stop very close to the site? How is word getting out, particularly to people who are not on social media? Thanks for your question, Mike.
Well, here's one way, on public radio.
Right.
Good job, Emily. Usually what we do when we do something like that, the city itself goes ahead and does a media blast. That means it goes to our print media, our electronic media, our website, et cetera, et cetera. Also, and I'm going a little bit out on a limb here, I think because we have such a strong representation with our existing food pantry, the one that's in Lafayette, Katie Bunder, mm-hmm. Is the one that runs that. I think there will be a connection with that. So what we try to do, and again, a little bit out of my comfort zone here, but, you know, we want to make sure that throughout the county that there are areas where people who are in need can have quick and easy access to food. You know, we seem to think that here in Greater Lafayette we're a relatively prosperous community and food insecurity is not an issue. Well, knock, knock, it is. So we need to make sure, whether it's at here in West Lafayette, within the city of West Lafayette, or out in the county or in the city of Lafayette, that it's accessible. So it's got to be on bus routes, and so we've checked that box. We can make sure that people who are in the public transportation business understand that, so they can inform taxi companies and things like that about that being there too. The other thing is hours of operation. Now, generally speaking, the hours of operation have to be so that it can accommodate folks who might work, folks that might be in school, you know, again, because oftentimes students are, you know, spend a lot of money on books and tuition, and sometimes they come up a little short too. So we need to make sure that that information is available as well. But overall, you know, having it centralized, having it at a location where the food can be stored is always a good way to make sure that the food will get into the stomachs of the right people.
Another listener question, and this is kind of this is what listener wanted to follow up from the conversation we had last month about West Lafayette kind of bringing a halt to some longtime class offerings. So I just wanted to share part of Kathy's email. Kathy, thank you for writing in. Kathy is 86. She's been taking Young at Heart, low impact aerobics, for 15 years. Mm-hmm. So she says her group maybe assumed this class might continue at the Wellness Center. And no one informed them that it wouldn't, but she doesn't think there seems to be a place for them to meet, you know, through West Lafayette Parks and Rec. And she just writes, it's hard to have these programs disappear, and that it happened kind of with no warning. And she just wanted to get an update. I would ask too, you know, is there any follow up? Have groups been communicated with? You know, what's the situation there?
Yeah, we actually, what we're doing right now is we're trying to make as many classes available at the rec center as possible.
Okay.
And we are still, we do have pottery classes that have been relocated. And again, a lot of that doesn't necessarily have to do with us. Mm-hmm. Again, a lot of people make the assumption that if a class or some sort of event is hosted within one of the city facilities, that it's ours, and oftentimes it's not. They're private vendors who are leasing space from us. And should their business plan change, or should something change within their personal life that makes them not in a position to be able to provide those classes, there's very little that we can do. We try to do the best that we can with making sure that whatever rates we do charge basically covers the necessities of keeping the lights on and the heat flowing. We don't feel that they're egregious at all, but sometimes people just aren't in a position to be able to continue with the class for some reasons or another. Specifically, pottery, dance classes, things like that, they're very popular in West Lafayette. So we try to do what we can to make sure if one isn't going to continue, that we either have the resources to provide it ourselves, or we either have that, or we have contacts with other groups or other areas that might be providing them for public consumption. But as it stands right now, the Wellness Center is where we are looking to host a lot of our classes and a lot of our different events, such as the dance and things like that. But it's brand new. It just opened. In some cases, we've actually extended the hours, so we're in a position to accommodate more folks. Mm-hmm. So all I can suggest is, as things continue to change, as we get more familiar with having the Wellness Center, and as folks get more familiar with utilizing the Wellness Center, just stand by. The future is very bright.
Okay. I wanted to ask about this. West Lafayette School Superintendent Rocky Killian announced this week he'd be retiring after 14 years in that position. I guess, what are the next steps? I know the next superintendent's going to be guiding the school corporation after a pretty tumultuous year, and quite possibly through some more tumult in the school year to come. So, mm-hmm. What's the best hire for that big task?
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, Rocky and I are really good friends. I we have worked closely together now for the 13 years that I've been here. And as a West Side graduate, a West Side School Corporation product, I thought he did a great job. He was just about as goofy as I am, which, to his credit or demise, I guess, but he was a real strong presence in our community, and I'm really going to miss him. I thought he did an amazing job. But West Lafayette's unique. We are different. We have a very, very interesting demographic within our city limits and with our school corporation. We have a very large international population. We have a lot of students. We have a lot of kids, our future students, that get a lot of hands-on guidance and instruction and necessary information from their parents, which a lot of school corporations can't brag about. So I think all those components make us unique. So this individual is going to have to be flexible, unique, and get a really good understanding of West Lafayette.
Okay, that's our time for today. Mayor Dennis, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
You can find this program at our website, wbaa.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@wbaa.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.